court ruling paves the way for some Yellowstone bison to be transferred to the Fort Belknap Reservation. Good evening, I'm Sarah Jovetic.
And I'm Courtney Anderson, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Reporter Ruth Eddy tells us why passengers can get a free ride on Missoula's mountain lion tomorrow. And in our feature interview, News Director Sally Mock talks with the Deputy Commissioner for Two-Year and Community College Education about the increasing value of Montana's two-year colleges. The Montana Supreme Court has reversed a lower court ruling that blocked transfers of Yellowstone National Park bison as part of a government-sponsored conservation initiative. The ruling could revive stalled efforts to return the burly animals to parts of their range where they were wiped out decades ago. Ranchers and property rights advocates had sued the state after Montana wildlife officials moved more than 60 bison to the Fort Peck Indian Reservation last year. They said the move was illegal under state law. But six justices on the state's high court sided with the state and conservation groups that argued the law did not apply to bison moved to tribal lands. That could allow the relocations to resume, including the transfer of dozens of the animals to the Fort Belknap Reservation. Tim Presso is an attorney with the Bozeman-based Earth Justice Law Firm who argued the appeal.
I was certainly gratified to see that the court opened the door for the continuing restoration of bison to appropriate landscapes in Montana. And the Fort Peck and Fort Belknap tribes have kind of led the way in figuring out what those landscapes are. And so I think it's quite fitting that the first bison restoration to the prairies of Montana, in terms of wild bison, that is occurring on Indian lands.
Ranchers opposed to the transfer worry about brucellosis being transferred from the bison to cattle, but Presso says all the bison being transferred have tested brucellosis-free. He also says the ranchers' concerns about inadequate fencing are being addressed.
Clearly, there's a legitimate interest of these ranchers in safeguarding their own ranch lands, and the way that the program sets up to deal with that is to require new, more sturdy fencing around the tribal bison ranges, and to impose some burdens on the tribe, the various tribes, if the bison escape from those fences, including if it becomes a chronic problem, state fish, wildlife, and parks can take back the bison that have been transferred.
Two conservation groups, the Defenders of Wildlife and the National Wildlife Federation, filed the appeal to the state Supreme Court. The lawsuit was originally brought up by a group called the Citizens for Balanced Use.
And in other news from around the state, the first of 20 F-15 fighter jets assigned to the Montana Air National Guard has left the Great Falls for Fresno, California, as the 120th Fighter Wing begins changing its mission. Colonel Pete Ronick says one fighter left yesterday, four more are scheduled to leave over the next few weeks, and seven more will move in September. The final eight will move around October. Equipment related to the F-15 is also being moved to California. Meng also is preparing for eight C-130 cargo planes that are expected to start arriving this fall. Ronick tells the Great Falls Tribune that an environmental assessment needs to be completed, crew members need training, and some construction needs to be done. The mission change is expected to cost Meng 45 full-time jobs and 35 part-time jobs.
The Environmental Protection Agency levied a $2.5 million penalty against a cement maker and required the company to invest $30 million in pollution controls at plants at nine states alleged to have violated the Federal Clean Air Act. Ash Grove Cement Company's penalty was announced today by the EPA and Department of Justice in a deal where the Kansas-based company will spend $750,000 to mitigate effects of past emissions. The EPA said this will reduce thousands of tons of harmful pollutants from plants in Arkansas, Idaho, Kansas, Montana, Nebraska, Oregon, Utah, Washington, and Texas. Ash Grove disputes it violated federal pollution laws, but says it agreed to the deal as costs rose. The EPA says this pack will reduce pollution that can hurt human health and cause acid rain.
Houston's Astrodome Stadium, New York's old Pan Am Worldport Terminal at Kennedy Airport, Montana's one-room schoolhouses are joining a list of the nation's most endangered historic places. The National Trust for Historic Preservation today released its listing of America's 11 most endangered historic places. It includes sites from Maine to Alaska. Montana Preservation Alliance Director of Preservation and Sustainability, Patty Dean, says the state's rural schoolhouses are emblematic of Montana history.
They're in every corner of the state. Literally every one of our 56 counties has at least one rural schoolhouse extant in it. And they really embody the hopes and dreams and success and failures of Montanans throughout the decades.
We'll have more with Patty Dean later this week on Montana Evening Edition.
Governor Steve Bullock has appointed Rosebud County Attorney Michael Hayworth as judge for the 16th Judicial District, which covers seven counties in eastern Montana. Hayworth has been the county attorney since 2000 and received his Juris Doctor from Valparaiso University School of Law in Indiana in 1995. He graduated from Colstrip High School and Miles Community College. Hayworth was appointed today to fill the post vacated by the February death of District Judge Gary Day of Miles City. The judgeship will be on the 2014 ballot, and the successful candidate will serve the remainder of Day's term, which expires in January 2019.
Public Service Commission Chairman Bill Gallagher of Helena says he's been diagnosed with early-stage pancreatic cancer. The 53-year-old Republican says it was discovered last week, and he will be going to Seattle this week for possible surgery. Gallagher told Lee Newspapers of Montana that he is a good candidate for surgery because of an early diagnosis. He hopes to beat the disease and run for re-election in 2014 in PSC District 5. Gallagher was chosen by fellow Republican commissioners to be chairman in January. He ran unsuccessfully last year for lieutenant governor as the running mate of Ken Miller.
An eastern Montana prosecutor says he opposes attempts to declare one of the suspects in the killing of a Sydney teacher ineligible for the death penalty. Richland County Attorney Mike Weber said today he also opposes a request by defense attorneys to relocate the January trial of defendant Michael Keith Spell. He declined to elaborate. Spell and co-defendant Lester Van Waters Jr., both of Colorado, are charged in the 2012 killing of Sherry Arnold. Spell's attorneys have asked the court to rule out a potential death sentence because he is mentally disabled. They want the trial moved to Bozeman on the grounds that jurors in Richland County would be biased by the widespread news coverage the case has received and because Arnold was so well known in the community.
A Hot Springs woman has denied a charge that she kidnapped her 2-year-old niece. Kerr AM reports 34-year-old Jamie Finley entered a plea today in district court in Polson. Prosecutors allege Finley took her niece from a Polson home on May 18th, prompting a statewide Amber Alert. Finley was located with the child the next day. Finley has said she removed the child to protect her. Family members say Finley was concerned the girl's mother was going to take the child to Butte to live with the mother's boyfriend. Family members allege he abuses the mother and the girl. District Judge C.B. McNeil set Finley's trial for September 16th.
An official on the Rocky Boy Indian Reservation is charged with stealing tribal money to visit her husband while he was in prison for theft of tribal money. An indictment unsealed late yesterday says that Rocky Boy's Health Board Clinic Director, Fon Tadios, is charged with stealing more than $50,000 in federal and tribal money. Prosecutors say Tadios used travel money and a tribal credit card to visit her husband in federal prison in South Dakota. Former Chairman Raymond Jake Parker Jr. was sentenced in 2011 for charging $59,000 to a tribal credit card for personal use. Earlier this month, Tadios received a restraining order against recently deposed tribal chairman Ken Blatt St. Mark, who argued in that case that Tadios was part of a corruption problem on the reservation.
The federal government is spending less and less on preventing wildfires, even as the nation endures increasingly destructive blazes. The Obama administration is proposing a 31% cut to the main program that clears brush and overgrown trees to prevent forest fires. That program is already funded at lower levels than 11 years ago. Automatic budget cuts that kicked in March have made the gap worse. As a result, the Forest Service treated 1 million fewer acres this year than last and expects to treat far fewer the next year. Federal fire officials say the problem is that an increasing chunk of their budget is eaten up simply by trying to put out the giant blazes. 8 of the 9 worst fire years in U.S. history have been recorded since 2000.
Missoula's Mountain Line bus system gave over 1 million rides last year, and tomorrow the bus is trying to boost its ridership a bit more. Reporter Ruth Eddy has more.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Tomorrow, Mountain Line is giving away free rides in honor of the American Public Transportation System's 8th annual Dump the Pump Day. Brad Stockman says Mountain Line is doing the same as many transit organizations across the country.
Whether they're new people trying it for the first time or regular customers, they're welcome to ride, and it's a free ride for the day. So
I could take one. There's something that I have to do across town. I might not. I have court all day tomorrow.
so I probably won't.
Although Missoula County Justice of the Peace Karen Orzek might not be taking advantage of tomorrow's free fare, she recalls many trips to and from her previous work at the university.
And I sat down and I looked out the window and I said, this is pretty nice. I do not have to pay attention to traffic. Somebody else is taking care of it. And then I started taking a book with me, and I would get my work done on the bus, and it was kind of handy.
Barbara Bestwick is one of those people who has to worry about traffic. She's been a driver for Mountain Lion about a year and drove a school bus before that.
It's a cautious thing to drive a bus, but we're trained well.
Although she drives many routes, her favorite is number 4.
It's a Bonner area, East Missoula.
She says kids ride free all summer, but it's nice to have days where everyone's fare is covered. For regulars, it's kind of a thank you and might encourage someone who's never ridden before to try it out. Bestwick says she can usually tell when it's someone's first time on the bus.
Yeah, usually they ask something, or, you know, they're a little slower or hesitant or not sure, you know, what to do.
Bob Howe, who I caught waiting for the number 7, is certainly not a newbie. Howe has been riding the bus for 21 years. He says a lot has changed, but still likes riding for the simple pleasures.
Well, just the rhythms, the rocking of the coach, good temperature. If it's real hot, there's an air conditioning. If it's cold, then there's a heater.
Brad Stockman says Mountain Lion is participating in Dump the Pump to celebrate the environmental and economic benefits to taking public transportation.
Some people don't believe in it, but it's the buses go throughout the city, and we highly encourage people to give it a go. So tomorrow is definitely a day that we encourage people to give it a shot.
Mountain Lion is also celebrating its 35th birthday through December with monthly giveaways for riders in their Hop On Board sweepstakes. You can find more about prizes as well as maps and schedules at their website, Mountain Lion, that's LINE.com. For Montana Evening Edition, I'm Ruth Eddy.
For nearly a quarter of a century, the name Bob Green was synonymous with Montana Tech football. Today, the college announced his legacy will continue. The new playing surface at Tech's Alumni Coliseum will be named Bob Greenfield in honor of the longtime football coach who served as the main fundraiser for the Digger Turf Project. Tech Chancellor Don Blackketter says Bob Greenfield will be stitched into the turf on both sidelines. Green, who retired in 2011, says he's proud, humbled, and grateful for the honor. Green coached Montana Tech's football team for 24 years. His teams advanced into the NAIA National Playoffs 5 times and finished as national runner-up in 1996. Green was named League Coach of the Year 6 times. The official dedication of the field will take place during Tech's September 21st home opener against Montana Western.
As we reported yesterday, the 2-year Bitterett College in Hamilton became the last of the 7 2-year colleges in the state to unveil its new name and logo. Montana's 2-year colleges have seen a spike in enrollment and variety of courses offered, and officials expect that trend to continue. John Seck is Deputy Commissioner for 2-year and Community College Education. In this feature interview, he talks with News Director Sally Mock about the changing role of the 2-year colleges and the future of the relatively new Bitterett College.
This college is evolving and is in the process of moving forward to assume the 5 key tenets of the comprehensive 2-year mission, which include providing university transfer programs, workforce development opportunities for the community, being a provider of developmental remedial education, being also a provider of lifelong learning, continuing education opportunities for the community and region, and being at the table with respect to community development and helping to address the greater needs of the community. We're very pleased. Victoria Clark has done a great job leading that college and working with her constituents and with the university to put together a fantastic strategic plan to move the college forward.
It hasn't been all smooth sailing for the college. It has had some funding issues.
The college is being funded through a couple of ways, tuition from the students, FTE reimbursement, and through its partnership with the University of Montana. So the college, as it exists right now, is still a subset of Missoula College in Missoula, and I think that presents some opportunities as well as there have been some challenges, but I think the opportunities to leverage the pathways and support for the students in the Bitterett through Missoula College, either through courses offered on site or online, and then to the university campus are significant. The college is serving presently over 200 students. New Certificate of Applied Science degree offerings, which will be made available right there in the Bitterett. And they are building maintenance engineering, computer support, customer relations, and medical reception. In addition, the college is going to be launching a certified nursing assistant program this fall. And the college is also participating in a statewide consortium grant that we are working in conjunction with the other public two-year colleges in the state and two tribal colleges with the U.S. Department of Labor. This consortium proposal will be focused on workforce development programs related to energy and advanced manufacturing. Probably going to be in the neighborhood of a $20 to $22 million grant.
Overall, in Montana, the enrollment for two-year colleges is up. How much is it up, say, in the last 5 years?
The enrollment for Montana's public two-year colleges over the past 3 years has increased 12%, which is great news. What we're really excited about is the completers, students who have earned a Certificate of Applied Science, Associate of Applied Science, or an Associate of Science, Associate of Arts transfer degree, has increased 22%. So that's significant. The Board of Regents have placed a real emphasis and level of support for Montana's public two-year colleges. For the two-year colleges within the Montana University system, the tuition has been frozen for the past 6 years, and the Board of Regents have recently committed to freezing the tuition at all public institutions of higher education in the Montana University system for the next 2 years. So that will mean 2 years from now, the public two-year colleges within the Montana University system will have had their tuition frozen for 8 years. That's significant because if we take a look at the tuition for Montana's public two-year colleges as a percentage of the tuition at the four-year units, the difference has changed dramatically. For instance, in 2002-2003, that difference was 69%. So that meant that the public two-year colleges were 69% of the average cost to go to Montana's four-year units. Today, that difference is 52%. So the tuition break is nearly half. And one of the things that's been really huge is through our Common Course Numbering and Transferability Initiative, we have a Board of Regents guarantee that all courses taken in the state, 2 or 4 year, will transfer. So that's one of the reasons why the first tenet of the comprehensive two-year mission, university transfer, is very important, because we want to provide access to affordable opportunities for students in Montana, across Montana, to take the first 2 years and then continue on at the university.
There is debate in the state, both on and off campuses, about what the appropriate role of the two-year colleges should be. Should they be for those Montanans who aren't necessarily four-year college material, university material, but who need and want extra training, job training, whether the two-year colleges should be a farm system for the four-year colleges or whether the two-year colleges should continue their legacy, really, of being vocational training?
And my answer to the question would be, I think the two-year colleges serve both roles. There's a lot of research out there, empirical research, that shows students who are university-bound, traditional high school students, are going to begin at a university campus. That's where they want to go. They want to have the university experience. However, in Montana and across the country, we have a huge number of students, both traditional high school students and the adult non-traditional students, those people who are between 25 and 60, who are looking to retool, retrain, prepare for a better job, a new advanced career. And that's where community colleges across the country, here in Montana as well, provide a huge benefit through flexible training programs offered at flexible times to help these people retool and retrain for new careers. That could be anything from energy-related to healthcare to business to computer technology and in between. I think that's one of the hallmark strengths of our public two-year colleges in Montana.
There was a report this week that 40% of Montanans now have a college degree, which is a tad higher than the national average. But last year, there was a report that Montana still ranks last in the West and 45th in the country in the percentage of those 25 and older who are engaged in higher ed. It seems almost contradictory.
We're making progress in Montana, but we have a long ways to go. And if we take a look at the census data, by 2030, Montana will be the fifth oldest state as measured by a percentage of the population that is 65 and older. That's significant. That means we're going to have a lot of people who are people my age today, over the next few years, are going to be retiring. And so the number of students graduating from high school programs across the state are expected to be flat, and that's strictly due to the numbers of students who are of the traditional high school age. So it's incumbent upon higher education in Montana, and this is a role that our public two-year colleges play very nicely, to reach out to that adult population, 25 to 60, and help them retool and retrain. And just to put it in perspective, in the year 2000, Montana was 19th in the nation for the percentage of its population 65 and older. 2010, Montana changed to sixth place, and then by 2030, we're projected to move up to fifth place. So we're getting older, and the traditional pipeline of high school graduates who go to college and then move on to a career is not going to help us to solve the challenges we're going to have from all of these retirements.
We have been speaking with John Seck, who's Deputy Commissioner for Two-Year and Community College Education in Montana. John, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
And in tonight's weather forecast for west of the Continental Divide, tonight rain showers are likely. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty winds, small hail, and heavy rainfall. Lows will be in the upper 30s. Tomorrow will be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain. Highs will be in the mid-50s to lower 60s. For central Montana, tonight expect widespread thunderstorms. Some thunderstorms may be severe with damaging winds and large hail. Lows around 45 to 55 degrees. Tomorrow calls for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain showers through the day and slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon, highs in the upper 60s. And for southwest Montana, tonight will be mostly cloudy and have scattered showers and thunderstorms in the evening, lows around 35 to 45 degrees. Tomorrow expect an increase in clouds with a chance of rain and thunderstorms in the afternoon, highs around 55 to 65 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Mark Hansen.
Could it be that the simple act of planting a native snowberry shrub or quaking aspen in your backyard is more than an expression of decorative taste? I'm willing to say that it's actually a simple but highly significant act of conservation that fosters a way of relating to nature that we and the natural world could sorely use. The ecological problems we face now require solutions on a mammoth scale, a paralyzing thought for those who care. But perhaps before we can achieve the elusive political will to take on these problems, a more personal, psychological change must be nurtured. The roots of the current crisis are deeply entwined in our Western psyche and ways of life. The dominant interpretations of the biblical narratives depict humanity as ultimately separate from a broken natural world, with God-given dominion over nature taking the form of domination. The biblical tradition then wedded nicely with the Enlightenment worldview that obligated us to master nature, and the supposed benefits of unfettered capitalism justify profit maximization over other values. The result of this toxic mix of influences on our modern mindset was a failure of our Western tradition to cultivate the essential truth that humanity is ultimately in a reciprocal relationship with all other living things. Detachment from this wild world became the basis of our abuse of it. With the sheer weight of this tradition behind us, how can we then come to realize, as Aldo Leopold did, that we are a part of a land community with a real, consequential, and reciprocal relationship to it? The approach of many people with conservation interests has been to get people into the wild, helping them to find some connection to, and ultimately a love for, wild places. Such experiences awaken our souls to the values found with time spent in places not subject to human control. As important as such escapes are for connecting people to the places they visit, the traveler abruptly returns to a world in which people are beholden to electronic devices, checking smartphones once every 6 minutes on average. Mindfulness of connections to the natural world is difficult to sustain amid such daily practices. It's easy to conclude, when it comes to the bigger ecological crises, that we don't stand a chance. We might then be tempted to take ecologist Paul Kingsnorth's advice to withdraw and seek refuge in our own domains, to give up trying to save this world. His advice evokes despair, but it actually may be better than he intended. Perhaps a more effective way to reconceive our connection with the natural world is to start with the domains we interact with every day. What if our homes and local environments called on us to have a relationship with the wild, even in the middle of town? It is ironic that as much as Montanans pride themselves on having a strong sense of place and quick access to truly wild areas, most residences look like houses most anywhere in America. The yards are dominated by millions of acres of non-native grasses that are not adapted to our climate, which require ongoing heavy irrigation and application of chemicals, and countless hours of maintenance in the form of mowing and weed whacking. These latter forms of effort are accomplished with machines requiring expensive fossil fuels and creating excessive air and noise pollution. The American yard is also based on an imported taste, originally designed to showcase wealth and aristocratic values. And we spend billions of dollars to indulge this ecological practice that promotes no sense of the places or local ecosystems within which our houses were first built. There is very little of the wild world here to relate to on a day-to-day basis. In fact, like the rest of our world, our domiciles are highly artificial and controlled. So maybe one way to turn our psychology around, just a little bit, doesn't require a trip to a wilderness area at all. Perhaps change can begin out our windows, among native grasses, trees, and flowers. The energy we would have spent mowing, fertilizing, and watering would be devoted to planting and learning the names of the wild flora that populated our yards long before the house builders arrived. It would be spent observing how quaking aspens attract longhorn beetles, which lure woodpeckers eager to feed on them. We could see how yard work cultivates the perspective of giving to the natural world, being actively involved in conserving even one small corner of it, rather than controlling and poisoning it. To plant a pine tree, Leopold said, one need be neither god nor poet, one need only a shovel. And this refuge of wildness, on one small plot of ground given back to wild nature, may yet facilitate our reflection on the relationship with the world we should be having, if we and future generations wish to have a natural wild world at all. This is Mark Hansen, guest commentator for the Mansfield Program in Ethics and Public Affairs at the University of Montana.
Mark Hansen is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Sarah Jovetich.
And I'm Courtney Anderson. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.